This is Aiden with OddballPilot.com. I'm in Nome, Alaska, and I'm sitting down with Tex and Ben Peterson, and they fly for Air. I'm, of course, flying for Ryanair right now. Singer's joining us from Seattle, as well as one of our members, Jordy Wilkinson from Bend, Oregon. And my last days off, I went down to Bend, Oregon, and met up with Jordy briefly in a coffee shop. And well, it wasn't that brief. It was supposed to be brief. We ended up chatting for, shoot, I don't know, it was probably a good couple hours, huh?
Yeah, 3.5, I think.
Yeah, that went cut into my gym time, damn it. But one thing we started thinking of while we were chatting there is that a lot of these questions that, well, it went beyond questions, but a lot of the questions that Jordy had could be answered sort of for a wider audience. A lot of questions we get asked a lot, and it's mainly about flying in Alaska and how you'd get a job flying in Alaska, what the flying's like in Alaska, and living conditions and so on. So rather than just have me answer questions, which just gives my perspective, it seemed good to sit down with Tex and Ben here too and give a broader perspective to what might be like to come up here and fly in Alaska. We, of course, when we were talking the coffee shop, went beyond that, and a little of Jordy's background. He spent 9 years in the military, so he's used to rough living. And he also grew up in Alaska, so he may have a different perspective than some people, but we get a lot of people who have been out of the military now are coming up here. So it's, we've had some rough living, too. So
we're all veterans.
We're all, that's right. Ben is, too. And actually, all three of us, all except Singer, are veterans of one of the armed forces.
I came very close, as you know, but
you did.
Never did.
You went to Hampshire.
Exactly.
And I joined the Corps for you.
Exactly.
So, Jordy, why don't you start off and throw some questions at us?
All right. Well, so one, you know, a lot of the things I've been doing is, you know, just trying to find my way as a brand new commercial pilot. You know, all of 250 hours, trying to figure out how to make that jump. You know, pretty much 500 hours, and then after that, the 1500 hours. I do a lot of kind of lurking on the internet and trying to find out information, and everything's kind of scattered. And I think I've had a lot of my answers. I found a lot of answers to my questions over the past, you know, year or so. But a lot of the ones I had is kind of some of the basic ones. I never understood starting out how it works with hours. You go through your commercial training and you learn all the Part 91 jobs you can have as a pilot. Well, then you actually get the rating and you don't have hours, and it typically looks like it's insurance, that everyone requires more hours for the insurance. Is that pretty much correct? Is that how that works? Does that make sense at all, what I was asking?
That totally makes sense. I think 135 minimums are 500 hours. Is that correct?
Well, if you want, like, PSC positions, 207. I noticed that all the companies post 1500, but everyone hires under 1500.
Right.
And there's no reason that with 250 hours you can't get a job. There's so many people I see getting jobs right at 250 hours at ERA.
Yeah.
Okay, that's for right seat position.
Right seat position.
And then the I think the PIC captain spot, the 1500, the way I've always understood it, Ben's probably more up to speed on what's going on now. They usually want 1,000 Alaskan time, 1,500 Alaska time, and that is for insurance only. And they can usually work around that. But we are seeing it more and more up here, especially in the last year, that you're seeing a lot more 250 to 500-hour pilots get hired to fly in the right seat. And then they bump up after, what, a year?
Yeah. Well, maybe a year and a half.
They want them to get 1,500 hours now.
They want 15, so they're really...
That's a year and
they
a half.
Put them in the 207.
They were getting up, like, at 700, then it was 800, then it went up to 1,000.
Well, we had a couple of...
cargo ones.
Youngsters do some crashes.
Oh, yeah.
And then the insurance cracks down real hard on the company, and so then they're real strict on it for a year or so, and now they're kind of backing off of it a little bit, so... let's get this guy in the sled. He's got 1,200 hours. We'll make him cargo only until he's 1,500 hours. Then he can run.
Kind of special case.
That way, and it's, he can't hurt any passenger.
Yeah, cargo only.
No, that's what they're doing.
Okay. And I think here at Ryan, it's pretty similar. You're not, you'll fly right seat in Acosta for a year to a year and a half minimum, and you're going to have at least 1,500, 2,000 hours before you got in the 207. But from where you're sitting, you're almost certainly looking at those right seat jobs, and you should be able to find something.
And the program is it's broke a little. It's broke now because of the higher minimums to be the captain. Before, a low-time guy could come in with 250 hours. He could fly right seat in the caravan, live off top ramen and $67 a day. And within, you know, 3 to 6 months, he's got his 500 hours and maybe a little more. Boom, he's in a sled. Now he's making his $200 a day for 90 days, whatever it is now. And now with the insurance requirements, the program doesn't work well because guys can't live off of $67 a day for a year and a half to get that 1,500 hours. And that's where it's starting to hurt. I think they raised it to $80 a day after 90 days. You know, that's some kind of big improvement or something. But it's just guys can't do it. And so they're having a hard time trying to figure out the difference here.
Isn't there an hourly pay on top of that, or is that it?
No, they don't get it.
Not for caravan Colorado. Okay.
It's only for captain, then you get the overtime.
So that's actually something to look at. The companies that are doing sort of the apprenticeship programs aren't going to pay real high because you're not required. I think at Ryanair you do better than that. I don't know what the numbers are, but you definitely do better than that.
In the 1900 at Haglin, you also do better than that.
Okay.
Because you're required crew member. So I think they'll hire you at 300 hours, 400 hours in the right seat of the 1900, but the slots are limited, more so than the caravan.
Well, here's a question for you then. It's here, Jordy, I'm taking all your question time. If you get hired right seat in the caravan, can you transfer the 1900?
You can, and most of the time they kind of like to do that because they're not out a heavy investment.
Right.
They can see, hey, do we like this guy? Does this guy like us? Is he a hard worker? What is he bringing to the table? Okay, we're going to, he's great, or she's great. Let's dump more into him. Hey, we got 1,900 slots open. We got three right now. They just sent Genesee. She's a caravan co-pilot.
Oh, wow. That was quick.
And she's got the time for a sled, or she's very close, or she's over.
Yeah, that's why I thought.
But she's a new hire. And so now she's passing up other folks that aren't
quite around a year and a half.
Who's been around. I mean, it's just so, it's getting complicated.
But they're working with that, putting her in the 1900. So
they want to put her in the 1900 in case she doesn't get in the sled before winter, and then she can ride the 1900 out with some good pay. And when they need her in the spring, boom, she's ready.
Okay, so Jordy, what I take from that is if you're thinking of going this route, it's worth getting a multi-engine rating because you can move into the twin turbine quicker.
Okay. There is a lot of people who turn down the 1900 offer.
That's true too.
There's a lot of people.
Expand
who,
on that, Ben.
Okay, so you got
to
weigh.
They're close to the slip.
You got to weigh your options. If you take the 1900 route, you get that twin time.
They want you to pay back the investment.
But you kind of owe them
a year.
A year.
Yeah.
Where if you come on with some little bit of time, everyone likes to hang on to the caravan. Because then all of a sudden you're in the 207. So you
so
beat
the
1900.
So they choose the pay suffering in the caravan
to
beeline to the 207.
And the 207 pays livable.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, livable, like 40-something, 46.
It's better than the 1900.
Yeah. It's,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and that's era, but I think you're going to see similarities. They're the biggest program going up here. At Ryan and like Little Ace or Alaska Central Express, you're probably going to get paid more. I know at Ryanair you'll get paid more as an FO, but your operating time is going to be longer. And Little Ace, I don't know what they don't pay a whole lot. They've got goofy schedules.
Okay.
But I think I might talk a little bit about them when we're down in Bend. They actually hire real low time too. But back to your question, a lot of these hour requirements are driven by insurance, not the FAA. But you do have to meet the FAA requirements first.
Okay.
I want to say, hold on, I got something to say on that. Don't let those hour minimums get you down. Just remember, if you got a commercial on an instrument, you're hireable.
Okay.
That's how you should look at it. You can get a job, you got a commercial on an instrument. Don't keep focusing on those hours.
Okay.
I'll point out that Ben is an extremely positive individual.
I went through the IC program, and it was great.
Ben did.
I spent actually a year and a half in that.
Okay.
Yeah, but you were in Europe. It was more fun.
No, he was right seat of the caravan for a year and a half.
Bethel, Barrow, St. Mary's, Antioch, everywhere.
Yeah. All right, anyway, go ahead, Jordy. It's your turn now.
All right. Well, that was all real. That's all the kind of stuff I like hearing and like hearing about. That's one of the biggest questions. But you said there are several other companies that also do hire low time pilots. And I guess one of the issues is, and this is something I have a problem with being down here in the lower 48 versus up there in Alaska, I can't go in and talk to people. Websites always just list 1,500 hours for every company you look at, for every job pretty much. So how do you find some of these other companies that also hire low-time pilots? Is there any trick to it, or is it just networking?
Okay, networking is great, but I found the trick to that thing with the website that says 1,500 hours, just ignore it. Apply to them anyways. And apply to all of them. Even if they say 1,500 hours, there's a chance you'll get in.
And actually, I'm not going to argue that one because I heard about, and this one just heard about it, it's true. There was a pilot who got hired by Alaska Central Express to fly right sea in the 1900. He was hired over the internet with 250 hours. Mm-hmm. So it never hurts to be bold. It certainly helps, and you even said it, you mentioned that as soon as you mentioned that you've lived in Alaska for quite a while, you get a very different response than when they just think you're someone from Alabama.
Also, I was jump seating once on Alaska Airlines, and the captain was telling his old war stories, and he's a 30-year guy or whatever, and he said, he's all intense, what you got to do is, you got to get on with the shittiest airlines and get the fastest twin turbotide you can, and get the hell out of there. Get on with it. So, and then he went into his stories of flying for some outfit I've never heard of in the 80s in Anchorage, and I couldn't even use full power on takeoff because it was twin otters. It was twin otters, I don't know. He had this whole. His name's Steve. You ever run into him?
No, but I'm going to throw in something else on that. Everyone's idea of a shitty company differs. There are companies that I think are not good at all, and I've talked to people flying for them who are like, they think it's really good. So take in the information, but don't be put off because somebody tells you that a company's not good.
Well, at the same time, it's like what you said, Aiden, when you were down here and we were talking is... you were talking with a friend of yours that was very low time. You said a company wasn't that great, and he looked at you and was like, look, I have 250 hours or 300 hours. I'll take anything I can get. It's kind of that same deal.
He's flying up here now. He's in COTS and loving COTS is fantastic, and he's loving COTS. That was a wake-up call for me. I think I told you I was running that whole list of airlines. Say, this one's good, this one's bad. And he looked across the table and said, dude, I have 257 hours. And I was like, take the first job you get.
Yeah.
So another question I have, I guess, for you guys. Is there any type of, being a new pilot, I'm in my 30s, I've done a few things in my life. Is there anything experienced to put on a resume, and you're kind of moving this way, that non-aviation experience that stands out more than others? I've read on one of the, there's a forum, I was talking about resumes before, think, Aiden, you said that you had a buddy that had a master's degree and that almost counted against him.
Yeah, the garbage collector got everybody's attention. They liked that.
Yeah. So is there experience that stands out more than others? Is there, you know, while I'm sitting here, while I'm down here, trying to find, you know, trying to work towards getting a job, getting interviews and stuff like that, is there any experience
that
you work towards? The CDL? No. No.
Oh, okay, just check. You do, right?
I do, and I use my CDL almost every day at work.
Well, this answered, Ben said this too in our last Q&A, which was get as many weird things as you can, like your HF radio license.
It builds a resume.
It builds
if
a resume.
If you have nothing.
Yeah. You actually have something, though, because you've got, you guys probably, by the time I came up here, my Marine Corps stuff was not really pertinent. But Jordy, you had a really interesting military career. I don't know how to get all that onto a resume. It was not a normal, and that was pretty diverse. The wildland firefighter stuff is usually good for jobs up here. You know, cater to what you're looking for. Many of these Alaskan kind of blue-collar jobs definitely put down the blue-collar type work. And your military career definitely put that on and maybe even go a little more in-depth than you know, most people. Like I just put, you know, a 9th Space Marine Corps, you know, Lance Corporal, anti-tank assaultman.
Now, do you guys know?
Go ahead.
Do you guys know? Do most companies up there, if you look at the percentage of, or all the resumes they get, like what percentage of them are just like typical sort of Alaska bush pilot wannabe guys from down here who have no blue collar background whatsoever, you know, learned to fly at some local flight school or went to an aviation college or something and really have nothing unique about their resume or their experience that would make a small or large Alaska air taxi company like even take a second look at it. Are they getting mostly resumes like that and therefore these unique resume items really stick out? Or are they getting mostly resumes from people who have unique backgrounds and really know what they're getting into?
Well, I'll tell you the one I'll answer that more fully, but do you remember when that astronaut applied? Yeah.
He turned him down.
Yeah. This astronaut, he's the one whose girlfriend drove from Arizona to
Florida to Texas.
Texas, wearing the diaper and kind of went psycho with his girlfriend.
Oh,
and
wow.
She went psycho with his wife. Well, NASA didn't keep him, so, and he was from Anchorage originally. He's from Alaska, so he applied to a bunch of airlines. But I heard from a lot of people, "Hey, we just had an astronaut apply," and I don't know where he ended up. I don't think he ended up with one of these air taxis.
No,
I don't think
so.
I think everybody thought he was like, you know, he's an astronaut. What the hell? He's not going to fly a 207. But that being said, Mike, I think it depends on the time. I think a year and a half ago, I think all these chief pilots had resumes 6 inches thick with everybody from, you know, 747.
Guys like Aiden to,
yeah.
We had a lot of 747 guys. Come on.
Yep, a lot of 747 guys who've been furloughed.
And
went to TF and did so-so, probably.
So-so. Mm. But yeah, a lot of them, come on. They came out when I came on.
It's hard to go from a 747 to a 207. Some people do it really well, but I think it can be hard to go from those type of jobs back down.
It's challenging.
I think now it's different. I think that you get more of your new flight instructors and your brand new 250-hour commercial pilots. They're starting to think commuters, airlines, because the airlines are hiring and the commuters are hiring as a result. So I think up here that resume stack that was 6 inches thick is probably 3 inches thick.
Or less.
Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact that one chief pilot needed a bunch of pilots. He didn't look through that stack of resumes. He pulled the first 10 off the stack and said, call these guys up.
Mm.
So you could have the best resume ever, and if it wasn't on his desk. But that's where persistence, send a resume in, call up, send emails if you can get an email address, send a resume back in 3 or 4 months when you get some more time. And you want to keep your resume towards the top of that stack, and you want them to know your name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because not to downplay what you guys do at all, but like generally speaking, you know, what a chief pilot is looking for more often than not for one of these, you know, low time jobs is somebody to fly an airplane and learn how to do it and do it safely and all that. It's not like corporate jobs down here where, you know, they're looking for somebody with unique creative abilities or something, you know, like it depends on the company probably, but
you know what they're looking for a lot. This is, they're looking for compatibility. And I think this is from jobs up to the airlines. It's, you have 250 hours. You could be the best pilot in the world, but you only have 250 hours. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure you're going to get along with everybody in the pilot house. Your captain's not going to hate you.
They just want regular guys and gals. They want people who other people can stand to be around. They don't want nerds or geeks.
Mm-hmm. Speak for yourself.
They don't want somebody who is untrainable because they know everything already because they were right out of flight school. Or they've just been instructing, you know, and they've got 100 students that pass straight in a row or something. They look for guys like yourself. Oh, this guy's been through the military, so he knows how to live with other dudes or whatever. And this guy's had all these other experiences, so he's pretty probably balanced out. They don't want extreme, although we've been getting a lot of extreme lately, one end or the other. Just want middle of the road kind of people who can learn and live with others productively.
That's when Bering Strait School District was looking for a new pilot. His Doug Hemnes had his heart attack, and the job was great, but I didn't want to live in Unifleet full time. And so when they've hired two new pilots, Mike Moore last year, Callahan now, and the comment I've always made when they ask, when they say we got this new pilot, what do you think? I'm like, they're good because they're going to be normal. They're going to do the things you expect them to do. You don't want someone who's doing extraordinary things, because that usually means questionable. And you also don't want someone who's lagging behind. So you kind of want people to say, yeah, they're a good guy. They're going to fit right in. That help at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I'm not up there flying.
Well, I can go extremes too, but on a resume, that's kind of what you want your resume to reflect. Your military career is pretty cool, and so you do want to. I would try to get a little bit more of the military on there, and I'd put the wildland, forest, firefighting, stuff that just makes you look like a good, solid person, and you can hang out with a bunch of other people and work long hours and stay moderately cheerful. I don't always do that, but. I don't like going unplanned. That pissed me off. But that's how I think of resume. Instead of trying to make yourself look extraordinary, kind of, you want to look competent and good. And the things that will stand out are the wildland firefighting and the military career, I think.
Okay. The willing to get dirty jobs.
Willing to get. Those are the ones. Now, yeah, exactly. If you're applying for more commuter-type jobs, more white-collar, you might want to temper that. Stick with the military stuff, because everybody's going to see that and, by and large, think that's good. But you might downplay the wildland firefighting. I'd have it on there, but it's good. But, you know, that's for more white-collar job. Highlight more education and things along those lines. That makes
right,
sense.
Education, yeah.
Yeah, something I'm lacking. I know we had a banter on the network about all that, too.
The other thing is just networking is important. Getting in, talking to the chief. He's a real easy guy to talk to at ERA. Jason Wilson is his name. And another thing is, because if they see you up here and you're living in your car, like until you get your interview, they're like, look, and you lay it on the line for them. Like, hey, I'm running out of money. I'm in my car. I need to go to work. What do you got? They're like, you're our guy. Let's go. Yeah, I don't know why, but they just love that stuff. I've seen story after story. Guys drive a car up here. They camp outside the building. And They'll probably hate me for this one, but.
Well, you can also, you've got a wife, so that does change things. I think a lot of airlines like guys who are married, but they have to also understand that your first year at the company, your married life may not be so good.
I was told.
Well, if you're just starting out, it's easier if you're single. If you're having to go through that co-pilot program and you're broke for a year because they're helping you build all these valuable hours and experience, you're basically an intern for a year and a half unless you can get over an era to the 1900 and then they'll pay you, you know, like a base. I think it starts at $40 an hour.
Oh, that's reasonable.
Yeah, it's really good because I was only 20 when I started. So I'm curious. But it should be an extra 20 captain.
Yeah, that's one of the downsides right now of looking for work is, you know, if I was single, I'd be up there already. But, you know, having the wife, need to stay that, and she's stuck here for a few years. So I have to find a way to commute or, you know, find something. But I've always been told, you know, like you said, that first year at least, you're an intern. And that's the way you got to look at it. You know, unpaid if, you know, is basically about it. You know, so that's something banking on, you know. I know and I'm banking on and I know it makes it harder for me. Got another question about resume, and I know some of this stuff has been touched on in other interviews and on the forum, but I figure put it in one spot. You know, putting down time, you know, how to write your flight time at 250 hours. I know Aiden has said it, you know, before. It was you put your total time and you don't have to church it up. Don't put, you know, 6 hours of tailwheel and all that kind of stuff because, you know, chief pilots look at 250 hours and they know exactly where you are. You don't have a lot of experience. But what about endorsements? It's kind of one of my questions. As I put endorsements down, a commercial pilot, do I have to write that I have a complex endorsement since that's required for commercial? You know, the kind of those little things, you know. What do you guys think?
I would say if it's required for the commercial, not, because they're going to know you're there. But I think like a tailwheel endorsement, I would certainly put down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if it's something that's implied with the actual rating, I wouldn't necessarily put it there. But anything extra, again, like a radio station license, I'd put that on there.
Okay.
But yeah, I think I told you, I mean, I've talked to a couple of chief pilots who just got tired of reading all the little small times, you know, 0.7.
Don't list every plane you're flying.
Yeah, don't, 0.71 or Cessna 402 or something. But I think you do want to, any extra schooling you've done, I think I would put on there. Get some, Tex is nodding and Ben's nodding. Any extra training, schooling, training. I'd put down if you're an EMT or a wilderness EMT.
Things like the Civil Air Patrol. I know a lot of people down here in the Lower 48 don't like the Civil Air Patrol very much. A lot of pilots don't. How do people look at it? And those, you know, if I volunteer with the Civil Air Patrol and fly with them, is that looked at more favorably up in Alaska by chief pilots, or is it kind of depend?
I think it's going to kind of depend. I think I would put it down. It's not going to hurt, but I think there probably is a mixed feeling on Civil Air Patrol.
Wilson would probably like it.
I think Wilson would like it a lot.
Because he's a firefighter and all that kind of stuff.
And if you know anything about chainsaws and you apply to Aero, put that on there too. Wilson loves chainsaws.
Well, I got that.
Wilson always has a project going. So if you have any spare time and want to, no, I'm just kidding.
I would.
You know how to swing a hammer, boy?
I got a garage that needs to be built.
No, seriously, that's what he does.
Well, that's how Tom got his job with Speedzak years ago, bartending. I would put Civil Air Patrol on there definitely. I mean, it shows some sense of civic responsibility if your Army career didn't do that, at the very least.
Right.
And I think everyone gives Civil Air Patrol a certain amount of shit. Up here, they tend to crash every year, something. but that doesn't mean that people don't view it as a good organization. You know, we're pilots. We like giving everybody shit for all kinds of stuff.
So. Yeah. Okay. Another question I have, and I know I actually talked about this with you, Aiden, but another buddy had the question, so I'm going to mention it. Seaplane rating. At low time, you know, being at 250 hours, is it worth it to go get a seaplane rating now, or should I wait? And then kind of what's the to get hired on and build time with your seaplane rating, kind of how do you go about doing that? Can you get a job at 250 hours with the float rating? If not, what's kind of the minimum-ish hour requirement, I guess?
We're going to have two answers here.
One, you better have a good network, really good connection.
Okay.
The other one is not good.
And so, yeah, so Ben's thinking it's not worth it. I think there might be a couple of reasons it might be. One is, if you can put the funds together and you're not flying because you've done all your ratings, you get it because it keeps you flying. And if you're going to spend money on flying, you might as well get something besides just hours out of it. So it's a way of keeping you current.
That's a good point.
And then if you want to go up for a float, if you want to fly floats, you're going to have to get it at some point. And there's no reason to wait if you can, again, if you can afford to do it. It's not the most expensive rating out there. And I think if you couple it with a CFI, there are interesting instructing opportunities that can come up with a float rating if you're willing to build the network. And that would be Chablis down in Arizona. A ton of, actually, a lot of float flying schools, but Chablis is pretty big.
There's some work up here.
There's work up here at Moose Pass and at Talkeetna, and I think at Lake Hood.
Tennessee came up teaching at Talkeetna.
Esther did too.
Yeah, so did Esther.
So, and then Kenmore. Kenmore Air Harbor also hires. I mean, when Mike and I got hired at Kenmore, there was, what's his name? God, I can't think of his name. He's flying for FedEx now.
Rich Maddox.
Bevin. I was thinking of Kerry Bevin.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, Bevin had gotten hired right before we got hired. He got hired to flight instruct, and I don't think he had a whole lot of time. You know, maybe 300-400 hours. So that's where a float rating I think would be worth it. But just to randomly get it, probably it's another thing to look good on a resume. It's another rating, but I'd probably do a tailwheel endorsement first. But it's cheaper, and might give you a chance to. Rent some cheaper airplanes. I rented a Champ for $28 an hour. I know that doesn't exist anymore.
That would be awesome.
That was wet.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm old.
Wow. I don't have a tailwheel endorsement.
Yeah, well, so you suck.
Or a flow rating.
And this is why we don't talk to Tex very often.
Just for the record.
Because he just can't fly anything except the 1900.
I'm just
We just talked to Mike, and I were just talking to a guy this morning who does aircraft sales, and he started this when he was 17, and he got every rating, or he got his tailwheel endorsement. He just started borrowing planes from people at the airport. So that's not, you know, again with the glider flying, to get in there, they usually fly either crop dusters. I see a lot of crop dusters do that, so you need a tailwheel endorsement to fly for them. So that's another kind of way into kind of sort of these they're not even always starter jobs. We've got a guy on the website who's, I think it's a part-time gig for him, but he's towing gliders.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any other skills besides flying?
Been in the Army for 9 years.
I have a few skills, yeah. You know, and that's one of those things.
Because you're so new into flying, maybe look into some of the other skills, because this is a tough gig, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just being honest there. It's a hard road.
Yeah.
Until you get up there, you know, until you get into it pretty far.
It is a long path for this job to get good, but yeah.
Yeah.
you know, it's not always John Dale, my last co-pilot. He moved on. He went to fly medevac out of Anchorage, and he's going to upgrade to captain this fall. So he's been flying 2 to 3 years. Well, he did all his flight school stuff, and that took a while. But he's been flying commercially for about 2 years. And that gig will lead to a good be-at-home-every-night job. He's got a 3-year-old daughter at home.
Okay.
It can be a tough career.
Yeah.
You should have heard me on the radio the other day.
I did.
And that's one of those things looking at. I have several career level skills, and but it's all stuff where you're gone, you know, quite a bit. So it's.
This won't be any different.
Nope.
Yes.
I think that's most of the questions I had. Let's see here. What's it like living in the villages, being out in Unalakleet, Bethel, Barrow, living in the pilot house, I guess. I guess that's another question that I think would be kind of interesting.
Different in each base.
We had a great talk about that last night when we were having pizza with Ivan. It depends a lot where you're based, and usually when you're starting out, it's you're usually going to get one of the more crowded, younger bases, at which there's usually a lot of. Well, we'll keep this general. It's honestly era. You guys never fly in Bethel. I don't fly for you anymore.
I don't live in Bethel. I don't know anything about Bethel.
The younger bases, there's often a lot of. I've described it to people when they've asked me this in emails that it's often like a frat house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty, I don't think I'm going to get a lot of disagreement.
No.
And I think that's across the board for almost all the companies except Ryanair. Our pilot house is quiet, and I'm not even kidding. We go elsewhere to party.
Yeah, so if you're an old guy, like me, you don't want to live at the pilot house.
But they usually separate people like that, though.
Right? They do, and
they do. Antioch is like a retirement. Yeah. It's like 60 and over base.
Except for Brett.
Brett's almost there.
You're probably right.
Yeah, he's in his 50s. Then you got young Bucks base is Bethel. Unless the old guys there have their own housing and are permanently living there with native families or whatever. I don't know. And then you got Nome, which is kind of just a mellow base.
It's like
mellow
a luxury cruise in Nome.
Yeah, it's luxury cruise.
Hardwood floors, big screen TVs. It's again one of those things with seniority, you'll have the housing will get better, but you'll probably change bases to where the living's going to change. You've got senior guys at Bethel, but they live in their own houses.
And you got other bases, like to the far north, where they just send off people that are a little bit different.
Hollywood. God. They also make a lot of money up north. Oh, yeah. So that's all there, but I think you're going to see the same thing in any company that has a lot of stations. The less desirable stations, you're going to get a younger crew, and it's going to be a little more festive. And the
late nights.
More desirable stations, you usually get an older, more boring crew. What did Mike Moore call you guys second shift? The flatliners?
The flatliners.
Right.
That was Callahan's name. That was when he was here.
So it sort of depends what you want. I've seen it actually recently with ERA. I don't know if they're doing it deliberately, but I think there is an effort made to match personalities with the bases.
I think so too. And ship.
And ship.
Because again, airlines want compatibility. They want everyone to get along. They don't want. But they don't want people to be.
I almost think it happens naturally.
Naturally.
Almost. Almost not even. I don't think they're sitting over there with a marker thinking this guy likes this guy.
This guy's crazy.
Well, all the bald people live in your downstairs house.
It's true. But it was true.
But we didn't plan that.
We did not plan that. Just one day, I took observation. All the bald people were downstairs, and all the hairy guys were upstairs.
Just we didn't just have.
I should say non-bald, not hairy.
So as you can see, Jordy, very important things are decided sort of on the fly.
It's amazing. I never knew the depth that goes into this.
Nothing went into it.
It just happened.
It was the way I don't know how it happened.
And people on a shift are all like each other.
I just noted it like one day. Hey, everybody down here is bald. Everybody upstairs has hair. Oh my gosh.
So when you guys are on a shift together, are you
upstairs, by the way?
Obviously, you're living together in the pilot house, you're working on the same shift. But other than all flying at the same time, how much interaction is there with each other? On a work basis, like are you actually, loading planes with each other, doing stuff other than living in the same house and then just hearing each other on the radio?
Yeah, we help each other if we're shorthanded. Most of the time, each of us are worried about our own flight and our own plane and getting our own load and our own fuel.
And it all happens.
It all happens at the same time. Mm-hmm. But if we're shorthanded and you see somebody in help, well, yeah, you run over and help load a plane or unload a plane. Last night, the co-pilot, Genesee, I found out today when our fuel truck broke that she had already fueled both caravans in the 406, to my surprise.
Sweet. And put the correct amount on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you just, as a lead pilot, you kind of put that in the back of your head for when she needs that letter, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. Dang, I remember that, you know.
I think most of the companies, too, are pretty, there's usually a good relationship between pilots overall. Like last night, a pilot who flies in Fairbanks came into Nome last night, and he actually called up his station manager to see if he could spend the night and just hang out up here for a night. And, you know, that was super fun. I hadn't seen Ivan for a while.
Yeah, that was fun.
So I think a lot of companies you can actually do that with. It might be a little easier at yours. So it can be pretty social. And work-wise, I think a lot of people do hang up. Steve went off flying, but you guys went and hiked 3870. My base where I am right now, it's really just me and my co-pilot. And we're sitting 4 feet apart all day. There's probably less effort to socialize at night. But I'd say all the stations, anywhere I've flown, there's definitely you hang out with the people you work with. Everett's would go and, you know, drink beer at Pike's Landing after work and give the DO shit for making everybody work on their day off.
It's 24/7 for 2 weeks.
Yeah. That's well, and if you work more than 2 weeks, it's 24/7 for as long as you
eternity.
Work. Yeah. So, 1,000-yard stare going on.
So, are you guys doing much night flying up there? Just kind of
in the winter. Summertime, there's no night. So
it doesn't set in the summer.
Wintertime, it's mostly all night.
Yeah,
there's a lot of night flying.
Yeah. All right, I'm just kind of curious about that. I got actually one more question here. It's pretty good. What is one recommendation you can make to a low-time pilot that'll give us the best advantage in finding a job?
Do they want if they want to fly and find a job in Alaska, the best thing they can do is come up to Anchorage.
Okay. I know from talking before, typically that's around February is the time to come up. If you can pick one time a year to come up, kind of February. Is that correct?
That's pretty good, but also be in contact. You know, be in touch with the chief or the DO or whoever, and time it so it is the best time of year for that. Usually we put on spring ground schools, but you don't want to come too early. You don't want to come late.
Yeah, and that's you're going to, every chief pilot you're going to call up, they're going to say, nope, we're fine. We're not hiring right now. And
it's a lie.
It can change.
It changes overnight.
Exactly. So stay in touch. February is good, but I would start sending resumes in January, even for the seasonal jobs like in Talkeetna. Is by March, they know who they're going to be hiring. So you want resumes going out. You might time a trip up in February. I mean, this is one reason we started the network, because it is all, you know, you want inside information if you can get it. And so my hope with the network was that people would start friending people, or at least throw questions out on the board, and somebody who flies for the company you're asking about could say, hey, listen, I think we're going to be, you know, running short here in the next few months, to give you kind of a heads up on they might want to start, you know, bombarding the chief pilot with phone calls and resumes. So February is a good general. I'd say February, and then probably again in September, well, October after hunting season is probably another good time. Okay. Getting some confused.
Oh, yeah, in the right seat.
Right.
You
seat.
Won't get any left seat jobs
right.
in.
Right. Right. Winter starting.
Yeah.
But you're looking at right seat jobs, anyways.
Yeah.
So that I think Air's going to be running a class this fall. I'd be surprised if you guys don't. And I think that's pretty normal for the larger airlines up here. So, middle of summer, you're not going to find much.
Yeah, everybody's pretty much hired and trained already. So, all right. Well, yeah, that's all I have, unless you guys have anything else for me or things I should...
Got this helicopter guy here. Let's use him.
Yeah, helicopter questions.
Okay.
Just down there.
Yeah, my helicopter guys never got back to me about specific questions. A lot of friends are helicopter instructors out here. But I guess kind of what kind of opportunities are there for low-time helicopter pilots? I know, I think they're commercial, for rotary, is it 150 hours or something like that? Is that what I think I remember?
Biggest thing is the summertime jobs here. I think one of the two biggest operators would be Air Helicopters and Temsco. Temsco is huge. They're out of Juneau and Southeast, and I think they're hiring every summer. They're always hiring. But you got a lot of little guys going around too. Okay. I don't know how much.
And so Aera Helicopters is now separate from Aera,
mm-hmm.
the fixed-wing side. They're two separate companies.
That's one of the harder ones. That's like one of the hardest ones to get into.
Well, they're also going to be. Is Country International? They probably are.
Yeah.
And
the guys we have up here, we basically have a helicopter flight school. We have I guess the story behind it is we have a community college out here that has an aviation program set up. That's great if you're using the GI Bill. It pays for all your flight training. And so a lot of these rotary guys, they get NVG time, long line time, you know, turbine time, stuff like that, all before they even get their CFI. And so does that, I would assume that kind of stuff is going to help them look better, but how much are they actually going to use that long line experience or the night vision experience and stuff like that?
I don't think they're going to use the night vision stuff, but the best thing I can kind of in order would be the first best thing they got going for them is the turbine stuff. You know, piston helicopters for commercial operators are a little rare.
Even with the R-44s?
R-44s are, well, those are popular, but like Temsco is all turbine. I think Prism's all turbine. Evergreen's all turbine. A lot of, you know, the big guys are.
Yeah, I'll turn one.
And if you do the R-44 thing, you got to have the SFAR. If you don't have that endorsement, yeah, 50 hours of flying at $500-something dollars an hour just to get that endorsement.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's, helicopters are expensive. I would tell them that they probably all know this anyways, but some of those flight seeing jobs on the East Coast, friend of mine from the same flight school there in Bend, he ended up flying for some and pretty shitty operator. It sounded like a shitty operator in Myrtle Beach, but he got enough time to kind of move on to a better job.
Okay.
So he got that job online. He just was persistent. One of my examples of guys I know watched them start from nothing. They got their up to their helicopter CFI, and it took them about 8 months to actually get a job. He hadn't done any networking before he got the ratings. And so it was kind of got the ratings, like, oh shit, now I need a job. And I think you can start the networking a little bit earlier. And so those helicopter guys, they should, before they get all their ratings, they should be sending out resumes and talking to people and trying to build some connections.
Okay. All right. So a lot of these helicopter places up there, they hire pretty much fresh commercial tickets, though. I guess that's the local time.
Or if you want to do a fresh ticket kind of thing, you might want to look at Columbia. Columbia flies out of Oregon there. Yeah. Long line. You know, they put them in the right seat or whatever the compact seat is on that one. And they'll start building time, long line time. They'll get long line certificate. Well, you might need the certificate before you go in. And I don't know, your school might do the training, but they might not certificate them. Be long, which do they have to be a 135.
I'm not really sure either, but
I've heard Columbia has issues, like some companies up here have the same issues. They have a hard time moving pilots from the co-pilot position to the captain position. So they hire them with 250 hours. They don't have any PIC time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get passed over because they've got 2,000 hours right seat and they can't transition.
And that takes us back to just get on with the shadiest place, get the best time.
PIC is important.
PIC is important. So even if it's a 207 or 172, if it's PIC, it's even more valuable than a Dash 8 co-pilot or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, if you do any of these jobs up here where they hire you low time to fly right seat, it's worth putting the time in to get left seat into something, because mm-hmm. you want 500 hours PIC time before you walk away. The other thing with the helicopter jobs, I think I told you about the other guy we got on the network there who, he got hired to fly a Jet Ranger. He was driving a fuel truck for the company, and they needed a pilot. And you know, I think he kind of stood out. I think he's an exceptional kind of person. But you know, like Columbia, maybe go get a job. You know, working the.
They got Cessna 206s there.
Oh, they do?
Stuff like that. I think so.
So they have fixed wing too.
I think they have. That's what I heard. Willie Coon flew from.
Well, this is the other thing with the helicopter guys. If they can get dual rated. Getting fixed wing jobs, I think, is a little easier at low time. And mm-hmm. there are more companies that I've seen that have helicopters and fixed wing. And it might, there aren't that
border
many.
Patrol.
Bearing, border patrol. And actually, with your military background, border patrol would be cool. Bearing, but actually, the Talkeetna Air Taxi now has one helicopter. I'm sure Will and Danielle and Roderick are going to fly.
Play silent, Doctor. Alaska
seaplane. The last seaplane to the helicopter. So if they're on the GI Bill and have some money to spend, getting dual rated may help them out.
Okay.
If they don't have the funds for it, then that's understandable. Because helicopters will shoot a guy who sold his property at Leavenworth to get a helicopter rating.
Yeah, the Jet Ranger that they have out here is $800 an hour. So,
how much?
$800 an hour.
Oh, school I was at was $1,300.
So that's the deal. So you guys are doing well.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're expensive. You can't really afford to rent your way up into time.
No.
You know, so I just thought of this. I mean, just sort of thinking outside the box. If they got four or five of them together, you can buy Hillers and Bell 47s for under $100,000, and shit, go fly that around. That's just a thought. Wait, careful. Like I said, go fly for the shittiest company you can fly if it's your own gig. But that might be just sort of something to float to. If they got four or five guys together who could all put $25,000 into something. They might have a helicopter they could fly.
Old Ben here is a brand new helicopter pilot. He's already had an engine failure.
Did you in the Enstrom?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He's already had to put it down.
Yeah. Wow.
I landed on the base too.
I'm Brian, Army Airfield.
Yeah.
And Jim bought a good binoculars.
Oh boy.
Yeah, he said after that.
So helicopters have issues, but so do airplanes.
Yeah, but we got wings.
The guy that I knew that I got my 11 hours in his Bell 47, he had two engines go out. And a student. So yeah, it's a helicopter's wrong gig, but it's tough when you got 250 hours. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, if you're patient and put the time in, helicopters are fixed wing. Patient, persistent, and willing to put the time in, you will get a job. But it's not going to fall in your lap. You got to put a lot of work into it. And the first year or 2 years are going to be pretty shitty.
Sacrifice.
Yeah.
Do you guys think if somebody has 250 hours and their goal is to fly in Alaska, does it make more sense to try to build time down in the lower 48 and then eventually try to get up to Alaska? Or does it make more sense to work really hard networking to try to get up there as soon as possible, or kind of do both at the same time and just take whatever happens first?
Third option. Do both at the same time. Fixed wing Alaska is probably a better, more likely to get hired. Rotorcraft, I'm not so sure about that.
It's harder.
Yeah, I think it's harder to get in up here. Temp scholars guys are 1,000 hours plus. That's what they say on paper. So I think rotorcraft, you're probably better down south, but you might as well hit up Alaska. I mean, Corey got hired without much time. But fixed wing, I think you've got a better shot at getting a job up here in general.
All right.
Keep on.
Yeah, networking's huge. You'll get hired. I mean, again, the guy we were talking to this morning, he got hired to fly an Astrojet when he had under 1,000 hours. And it's all because he knew someone who, you know, worked in a corporate flight department. And, you know, that's led to him actually doing a bunch of cool stuff. So much of it's networking.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the nice things I like about Oddball Network. My buddy showed it to me, and I think I've met more friendly people willing to help each other out here than anywhere else. So,
well, hopefully it'll stay that way. That's the purpose. And by the way, Tex and Ben on there too, so you can talk to them on the network too. Tex isn't really technologically savvy.
I'm not very good at it, I'll be honest. I'm not even Facebook or anything. This is my first social network ever, so I still don't even know how to type to anybody. I just go on and read what everybody's saying and whatever.
Yeah, but you can run a farm.
I got cows. Whatever.
All right, cool. My FO for this week just showed up. How's it going? Made it in.
I gotta get going, guys. It's good talking to you.
Work on social there. We're
appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for talking. Thanks for spending the time.
Yeah, cool. Did that get any more questions answered that we might not have gotten from up and or down in Bend?
I think all my questions, everything I could think of, was answered.
Good.
Yeah. Cool. If you think of any more, feel free to send some messages, and we'll see if we can make up some answers.
Yeah, definitely. And still going to be talking to some of my other friends and seeing if they have any other questions also.
Cool. And I'll see you. And I'll be back down in Bend in October or November, I think. So I'll give you a call, and maybe we'll make it to one of the microbreweries this time.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to do that.
Cool, excellent. Well, thanks for taking the time to call in.
Hey, my pleasure. And again, thank you guys for taking the time to answer my questions and help someone out.